listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, myself, and Brandon Maslin. We are so happy to have you here with us, and we're excited because we're doing a special series about things that you might not have known. A lot of people often ask me, Jen, how do I work with a recruiter? Or they explain to me that they get frustrated with the recruiters they wind up working with because of breakdowns in communication. So in this special series, we're going to be exploring what recruiters are good for and what they're not good for. And in today's show, we're specifically going to explore technology recruiting because there's very different kind of energy around how technology recruiters work than how a lot of other traditional recruiters work. So if you have a friend in tech, this is a good show to share. So before we introduce you to our incredible guest, Rory Bevington, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors, the people over at Markham Search LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including executive search, as well as payroll functions and temporary placements. So now without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit about who our guest is today joining us. Life started for Rory Bevington in the grit of the South London projects. Every day was a fight, and his initial way out was producing music, which he eventually did by traveling around the world and DJing for huge crowds. It was around that time that he found himself in tech recruiting. And when he became a part of that industry, he was a huge part in building a major IT staffing agency called Talenter. He helped to grow to 150 staff across 6 offices. And it was around that time that he also started to notice an issue that can be sometimes prevalent for recruiters. And that was an issue in the recruiting industry, that a lot of recruiters don't have a secure paycheck, and yet there are these huge recruiting fees. So Rory decided it was his passion and that he had a vision to secure the salary of recruiters while helping companies to exponentially grow by not gouging them with huge fees, thus creating Fabric Staffing. Over the years, he has helped the strategic growth of some of the world's most innovative companies, such as Tinder, Google, Headspace, Discovery Channel, Beats by Dre, and many others. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Rory.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's so wonderful to see you. It's funny, years ago, Rory and I used to work in the same building, and I think my old recruiting agency actually took over his old space when they moved out of the building. So we are intricately connected, and still here we are many years later.
Yeah, indeed. It was the greenhouse, as we called it. You get extremely hot in that little area where you actually used to sit when you, and I actually used to sit as well. I don't know why we'd sit under all the windows. but we did. That's where we found our calling. So yeah, fun times.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I thought it would be great to have you on the show today, Rory, when Brandon and I were talking about it offline. And we thought, you know, a lot of people aren't familiar with recruiters. I remember when I got offered a recruiting job, I didn't even know what a recruiter was. And so, Rory, maybe if you could share with us a little bit about your journey as a recruiter and, you know, some of your tips specifically to how to be effective at working with a recruiter. And then we can dive in a little bit more specifically into what it is like to recruit in tech in particular.
Yeah, sure. So interestingly enough, while I was, you know, as you mentioned, you know, prior, being a DJ and a musician, you know, I was somewhat of a starving artist, I guess, as most people are, you know, and I would constantly, you know, whilst I was trying to make it in the music industry, I would use recruiters for, you know, various different sales jobs. You know, I would get temp jobs or full-time jobs, whatever it ended up being, to make ends meet, you know. And I always remember, you know, I don't think I ever really met a recruiter that I met plenty that I liked, but they never seemed to listen. And they all were kind of, they seemed to be out for their own interests versus, you know, listening to what I wanted. You know, they never really seemed to put me first. So it was interesting when I came to America, the only, you know, I was looking for something new. I decided I wanted to leave the music industry and you know, get a real job. Recruiting was what was offered, and especially tech recruiting. And I just remember that, hey, you know, if I'm going to get into this field, you know, I'm going to make sure that I'm going to be the opposite of what I've, you know, seen and what I've, you know, been on the receiving end of it. And just make sure, like, you know, you got to put people first. You know, it's not about what you're going to get out of it. It's about, you know, helping them and helping them make the right decisions and guiding them along the way. You know, and also just being honest and listening. It's two skills that people, the most simplest things that people just don't do, you know. And I think I've made a career out of just being honest with people, which is the craziest thing when you think about it. But that's honestly true. I'm just very honest and down to earth. And, you know, I don't mince words. I say it how it is to everyone. I have a saying that, you know, you might not, you know, always like what I have to say, but, you know, at least it's honest. You know, and I think just actually genuinely caring and putting yourself in other people's shoes. And you know, that's kind of my motto, and that's how I train everyone else to be. And it served me well, you know, just being myself, really. So that's really it. I mean, that was kind of how I got into it anyway. My journey, man, how long you got? I mean, it's been a whirlwind from, you know, starting in a startup kind of tech staffing agency to now running my own, you know, recruiting agency that's been going for crazy. When I think about it, when I came to speak to you, Jen, about leaving and doing my own thing, you were one of the people that encouraged me to do it. That was, you know, 5.5 years ago now. Crazy.
Rory, can you talk about the importance of listening, or maybe how you teach your team to listen? Because it is definitely a skill. You know, I'm a recovering lawyer, and I certainly learned it there. And I was a recruiter, and I love what you said, that holding that space is one of the best things a recruiter can do, as well as shooting it straight, right? And so, but I'd love for you to talk about the skill of listening, and maybe even how, I assume if you're great at it, which you sound like you are, you have a way of teaching people how to do it. So could you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a way of teaching how people do it. And it's very simple, actually. So firstly, I tell everyone, listen, you're born with two ears and one mouth for a reason. So you can listen to more than you can talk. It's a simple methodology, but if people actually grasp it, they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. So there's one way. But the other way is I get them to practice something. So have a conversation with anyone, their partner, husband, wife, friend, whoever it might be, and ask them to explain something, or ask them a question is probably a good thing. It could be anything. Like, hey, how do you work the toaster? It could be anything very, very simple. And at the end of when they've finished answering the question, pause for 5 seconds. And I guarantee that they'll say something else within that 5 seconds. And they usually do, I'd say 50% of the time. It kind of, the reason why I say that, it helps people slow down, because everyone wants to interject when they've asked a question, they think it's answered, and they want to, you know, sort of jump in at the end, oh yeah, well, they want to agree. And just be quiet and listen to them finish. And then after they have finished, just sit there and count for 5 seconds slowly. It's kind of awkward. I always say you need to embrace the awkward silence. It's one of my favorite sayings. Embrace it. So that's really it. I mean, it's and just, you know, constantly talk to people about, listen, it's not about you, it's about them. So yeah.
One of the things I'm picking up on, I should have waited 5 seconds, by the way. One of the things I'm picking up about you quickly is the way you recruit, the way you teach your team to recruit, I bet is similar to the way you tell people to interview, which is be honest, be authentic, listen to what your interviewer is saying. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the same reason when we're talking to, you know, candidates about, you know, a new position, new career path, whatever it might be, you know, I always say that one of the most important things is reasons for leaving. You know, you have to understand why someone wants to leave a job, or if they've left the job already, what they weren't getting out of their previous job or career path, wherever it might be. And I've helped a lot of people change career paths, so it's not just going from one job to another. But I'm really understanding that, and that's key in listening too. So you have to know what the reasons are for leaving. There's usually multiple reasons. you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, what's really occurring for me, Bebby, or Rory, oh my God, Bebby, I just wiped you with your last name. That was hilarious. Rory, what's really occurring for me right now is that, you know, there is power in listening. And I don't know if you or Brandon had this experience, although I would often have both clients and job seekers tell me their deepest, darkest secrets. Because like you said, people want to be heard. They want to share their story, their passion. They want to follow their dreams. I remember very clearly a woman broke down in tears in my office. And she said, you know, I just am clear. I'm not doing what I meant to do. And I think a really good recruiter can sometimes even help to guide you. And I've had people sit in my office and, you know, just say to people sometimes, you know, maybe this isn't the right career for you. And how can I help you with next steps and refer them out to a career counselor? And I remember, Rory, much like your 5 seconds, I worked with a woman named Allison Armstrong, who is an influencer in working with men and women. And she said, when somebody's in masculine mode, and this can be a man or a woman, so it's just more depending on kind of what sort of energy that you're in, she said, you need to count to 120. Now, some of us don't have that. I think some people might feel uncomfortable with your 5 seconds. Although, especially with your, when you're with somebody, say the person you're interviewing with, or if you're with a job seeker who you're looking to hire, is sometimes people who are more introverted need more time than 5 seconds to process. And as Allison had called it, go to the well, because they, and it's really shocking on the few times where I've had the audacity to wait that full 120 seconds for somebody to answer, the most beautiful, profound things can come through. And that's where you can also develop really deep levels of intimacy with both other job seekers, with the people you're interviewing with. And even when you run a company, I would also do the same thing with my team members, because it can be really powerful. Most of us just don't take the time. 5 seconds or 120, it's about taking the time.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I always say that you're a life coach, really. You know, a good recruiter is a life coach, you know, and you got to take it seriously. Like, you know, people's jobs and what they do for a living is a huge part of their life. It involves, you know, what kind of relationship they have. It involves, you know, what kind of life they have, you know, monetarily, and also the kind of lifestyle. You know, it involves so many different things, you know, where they live, you know, can they afford to buy a house versus rent, or vice versa. So there's so many different components to it that, you know, are really life changing. I have many different sayings. I know one was like, we're just changing people's lives over here. Because you are, you know, and it is, you have to take it seriously. And listening is a huge key to that. And it's a huge key of communication, which is the hardest skill that everyone is trying to get better at, you know, myself included. You know, no one has mastered the art of communication 100%. Everyone is trying to get better at that. Whether it just depends on who you're communicating with. So anyone that says, oh, recruiting is easy, are you kidding me? So you're saying communicating is easy, because that's what recruiting really is. A good recruiter is a very good communicator.
Yeah, that's very true. It's interesting about the coaching versus the recruiting, because I went from the recruiting field into more of the executive coaching. And one of the things that it sounds like you do a little different at your practice, which is great. The company I worked at, to remain nameless, when I first got into recruiting, was very sales oriented. And to say that, there was not a lot of, oh, we're changing lives for the better. You know, there was a lot of recruiters who I think cognizantly knew that they were putting someone in from a good situation into a bad situation. And I couldn't do that. It wasn't integrity for me. You know, especially as a recovering lawyer, I was so miserable as a lawyer that if I met someone and they were happy, and as a lawyer, I was like, stay as long as you can. Never leave. I'm wondering about that uniqueness of your practice when you mentioned, I think it was the commission way. I mean, talk about how you found a different model. And I know Jennifer did this as well. And I did this later in my practice as a recruiter as well, was change people's lives for the better. And I keep in touch with those people. But maybe talk about the uniqueness of your practice and how you ensure that you are changing people's lives for the better. Because I think it's a wonderful gift.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the traditional recruiting model is, you know, per you know, a placement percentage fee placement, right? Which is, you know, perm hire, you know, fees anywhere from, you know, 20 to 30% these days, which are very large fees. So we do more of a subscription-based model where we don't get paid per placement, you know, at all. We don't do any contingent, you know, search. you know, why do we do that? Because we've always, well, I've always been about, you know, doing the right thing by people, making sure the candidate's getting the right job, the client is getting the right candidate too. There's multiple times, even when I was doing contingent search and I was going to potentially get a large fee, that I've told a client, you shouldn't hire this candidate. There's some stuff that's come up that I don't think they're going to be a good fit. And they get mad at me sometimes and say, Rory, but you presented this candidate. Yes, I know, but things have come up throughout the interview process that makes me feel that they're not going to be a good fit. So I want to make sure I tell you these concerns and upfront them, because I don't want you to have a bad hire or someone's going to leave, you know. And at Fabric, we've only had 3 people leave or not work out in the last 5 years, before 6 months, which is incredible. You know, I can't say many people can have that. And it's because we take a lot of time to make sure that is correct, right? It also, I think the contingent model, you know, breeds a bit of desperation, because you get that model that you spoke about, which I'm familiar with, that I never liked, which was, you know, oh, we just, it's sales driven. It's like, let's hit the numbers, you know, whereas we're not, you know, of course, we want to make sure we're submitting enough candidates and in volume, right? Quality candidates in volume. But we also want to make sure we're not just trying to squeeze a square peg into a round hole. So the model is specifically to be a true extension of a company's internal recruitment team, or if they don't have an internal recruitment team, then we are it, you know? And, you know, we really, you know, try and present the companies in the best light, do the best job for the client and the candidate, and really work both sides. So it's a bit like a real estate broker. Really, you know, there's some really bad real estate brokers out there, but when you get a really good one, the really good ones are the ones that generally you can tell are putting your, putting, you know, what you want ahead of what they want, you know? So, and that's the difference. It's pretty simple.
Shout out to Hope Roderick, my guru for real estate, and all those skills you mentioned, right? That put us first and listened and was intense. So now I'm wondering, that's the recruiter side. And I appreciate that real estate analogy, because that resonates for me. What advice do you have for candidates? What advice do you have for candidates, whether they should reach out to a recruiter to get hired? Should they reach out directly? Say someone finds a company, they want to get hired at this company. What's their best path, or how should they be partnering with you or any recruiter, really?
I actually did a YouTube video on this a little while ago. First step, here's what I'd say. I try and discourage any candidate from applying to jobs at xyzcompany.com. Why? Because it usually gets filtered in some black hole somewhere, or it's in some deep ATS grave that's never going to come out. So what I would say is, like, hey, before you apply to the company, look at the company. Do you know anyone there, firstly? All right. If you know someone there, try and get an intro to, you know, the hiring manager. I mean, listen, if you're, for example, a senior software engineer, right, you should know from your experience and just in general that the hierarchy is CTO, which is chief technology officer. Then it goes to either SVP or VP of engineering. And then from there, it goes down to director of engineering. Then it goes to manager of engineering. And there's probably some stuff in between, depending on the size of the company. But you should know which people you should be able to target. You know, so get a referral in there first, rather than just applying to one of the jobs. Reach out to a recruiter. I mean, recruiters will have ins at certain companies. You know, is there a recruiter that's connected to that company? Great. Well, reach out to those recruiters that are connected to that person at the company. You know, I would say send your resume directly to the chief technology officer, the highest up you can go, you know, or to a VP of engineering or to a director of engineering. Now, I would say, depending on the size of the company, a chief technology officer probably isn't going to be the hiring manager. It's usually going to be a VP or director of engineering, or maybe even a manager. They're usually the middle management is usually hiring managers. So reach out to those people, you know, direct. You don't always have to use a recruiter. Just be sort of smart about it and reach directly out to the hiring manager. If you want to use a recruiter, then again, try and get a referral to a good one. You probably have a peer or a friend that has used a recruiter before and had a good experience. I'd probably start there.
That's really great feedback, Rory. And the other thing that I would like to know about, because I can hear kind of what's going on in some of our listeners' minds, maybe, you know, tech is a huge booming industry. And, you know, with people are saying 25% or more of the jobs may be gone that we're traditionally used to doing in the next 5 or 10 years. And so if that is the case, and people are out there thinking, well, number one, maybe they want to get into technology for the first time, or maybe they're fresh out of school, or maybe they want to make a career pivot. What would be your advice to get on a trajectory? Like, what's the lowest level tech job that somebody could get into? And, you know, how do they get in and break into tech, whether they're a recent grad or pivoting, or, you know, maybe just looking to grow their career in a new direction?
Yeah, it's a great question, actually, Jen. A lot of people reach out that you know, aren't in tech, that want to get into it. And, you know, let's face it, it's really expensive to go to college, you know, and if you've done 4 years of college already, or even 2 years, you know, to pivot and then go, okay, I'm going to go do another 2 years of school, there's only so much school you can do, right? So I think there's a couple of ways, you know, around it. You could, A, become a project manager, depending on what your organizational skills are. Using tools like Jira and ticketing tools are fairly easy to use. You know, you don't have to have a tech degree, and it could be a good way in to tech. You know, the other way, you know, similarly is QA, quality assurance. There's lots of people that have no college degree that become, you know, QAs at, you know, various different companies, especially gaming and, you know, tech companies. They always hire QAs generally. So a QA route is a good way. You don't necessarily need a college degree for it. You don't need to, you know, be a programmer. So there's two kind of instant routes you can get directly into a company that could be potential. The other way would be to do one of these bootcamp things. That there's lots of them. You know, there's Dev Bootcamp. There's a bunch of them. I can't think of all of them off the top of my head, but there's so many. If you type in, you know, bootcamps, there's a few of them. And I've seen so many people get jobs in technology through doing that. From, you know, they're a finance manager for 15 years, and then they go, okay, I want to be in technology, and they go do one of these bootcamp programs, and, you know, 2 months later they're in a job as a junior developer. Great. So there's lots of different programs out now that you can do. So I would say start there. I mean, yes, you can go to college and do that. And I think college and doing a computer science degree is going to give you much more fundamental and stronger kind of engineering pedigree than it would be to do a boot camp. But if, you know, not everyone's got 2 years they can spend going to a computer science program. So a dev boot camp or something like that is a quicker way of doing it, and it will be a lot more cost efficient as well. So yeah, there's a few ways that I would suggest doing it.
Yeah, one quick thing, Roy, that I would love to know your 2 cents on. I was looking it up while you were speaking. A friend of mine, Bill Lau, I think invented this. It's called coderdojo.com. Have you heard of that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's so many of them. It does sound familiar, though, because it reminds me of Karate Kid. So
yeah, so it's the thing that's really cool for anybody out there interested or thinking of it. It's a community of over 2,000 professionals, and you can learn to code for free, and it's designed for young people who are looking to get into it. And I just remember when Bill told me about it, I was really inspired, because that's really cool. You know, if somebody is out there and they might not have the time or energy to go, or money for a full-time degree, but this is somewhere where you can teach yourself, that could be really powerful. And I think, like you said, there are all these boot camps and resources where now I think we're going to see more people pivoting in their careers, maybe even 40, 50, 60% than ever before, because the jobs and the supply and demand of what's needed in the world is changing so dramatically. We even saw it last year with COVID, is that there was this huge emergence in medical health, COVID testing, things, plastics, things that people would have never thought 2 or 3 years ago might have been viable. And now they're these new booming industries. So I think it's important to always be able to pivot. And Rory, I would love to know from you, can you talk a little bit about the pivot? Do you work with people who pivot, you know, in their careers? And if so, how do you help them? Like, let's say somebody is in one sort of technology, how hard is it to transition from one sort of technology role to another sort of technology role? Not even from financial to coding or tech, but from within the technology sector. Is that ever done?
Yeah, it's done often, honestly. You know, we do work with people like that. I've got to be honest, we don't tend to work with so many people that have come out of a bootcamp per se, just because the clients we have don't generally want they want to pay us to go find senior level people, right? But we give lots of advice to people coming out of those boot camps and things like that. And I often do multiple intros. And again, if you've got a really good recruiter, they'll tell you, like, hey, if you see someone at a company that if you're applying to a a company, then please reach out to me first. And 9 times out of 10, I'll probably know someone there and I can intro you or at least give you their contact info so you can reach out to their email so you can reach out direct. So there's that. But yeah, I mean, in terms of going from one technology to the other, yeah, all the time. It really depends. There's some technologies are similar to others in terms of the syntax. And there's obviously new ones coming out. So we see it all the time. Obviously, giving people advice on it is tough because I'm not a tech guy. So I've never done a computer science degree and, never will likely. But, we do encourage it if they're looking to get out of something, I guess, say more enterprise and want to go into a startup environment or wherever it might be. We might even encourage people, hey, it might be good to do one of those little dev bootcamp courses to get up to speed on some of the newer technologies, because a lot of people that have been using older technologies, they want to get into newer technologies. Those little dev bootcamps and coding dojos and things like that are really good for that, because they generally teach a lot of the newer, more cutting edge sort of technology that a lot of the more sort of forward thinking companies are using. So it's a real quick way of brushing up your skills. If you've been using older technologies and you want to get into something new, and maybe you've been doing C++ and you've been working in the aerospace industry for years, and you're like, yeah, I don't want to be doing this anymore. I want to do something more fun and, build a web app or, build a mobile app or whatever it might be. Or I'm going to do something in artificial intelligence, or something in the medical field is really, really interesting right now. So there's lots and lots of different ways of doing it. It just depends on what you're willing to do. And there's some people that don't need to do that. They're just naturally very good fundamental engineers that have got very good computer science fundamentals that can basically code anything, So there's that as well, which is the anomaly, which does happen quite often. So, yeah.
So, Rory, is there anything unique about interviewing any tech field that, versus, let's say, entertainment, let's say any other industry interviewing at a bank? What's unique that people should know if they're going to be interviewing at a tech company, whether they've been in tech for 25 years or they've been in tech for 25 seconds?
In terms of unique, I think that every company that wherever any of you should expect to be doing some sort of coding, test or a whiteboard exam or live coding test, there's various different ones, or take home test. I guess that's unique compared to, interviewing in other industries. I don't know, there might be, but I'm not sure about other industries doing actual tests. Whereas if you're a software developer, software engineer, you're going to be required to do some of that because that's the way companies test how good you are, I guess. How they go about them, I mean, I have lots of opinions on, which I'll keep to myself right now, but I think that's probably fairly unique. I'm not sure what else is fairly unique about it. I think the interview process is fairly standard. It's usually, same sort of interview process as most jobs. I think that it's sometimes a lot more casual than other industries. So if you take finance, for example, if you're interviewing for a finance job versus a tech job, you'll be expected to wear a suit in a finance job when you're turning up to an interview, whether it's a video chat or whether it's in person. In a tech job, if you wear a suit, they'll probably not hire you because you wore a suit. So there's polar opposites that way, So that's fairly unique. I mean, my old company used to, make us wear suits, and then we would go to meet clients in suits, and there's CEO and LA, and we just felt so out of place. So I switched it so everyone could wear jeans and just casual clothing because it was ridiculous. You felt so out of place. It was very odd. So I guess that's some unique stuff. There's some other stuff, but that's the big thing.
So that is the uniqueness of tech. And obviously, one of the things you talk about, the cultural fit, and every company's somewhat unique, but that more laid back style. So I don't know why it's popping in my head, but when something goes awry, when an interview goes awry, right? Like the candidate's at the final stages, it's not Rory saying don't hire this person or whatever, you know, like, hey, let's find another. It's like, I think they're the fit. And they come back to you and say, you know what? Turns out they're not the fit. What is the person doing wrong? What are they doing? What can people do to shoot themselves in the foot, if you will?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, a lot of things they do, they need to look up the person they're interviewing with. I've had that often a lot. Like, you know, yeah, they didn't know anything about me. You know, so I think, you know, we take ownership of that as well. Like, you have to prep the candidate before they walk into an interview. But also, you know, some of those things they should do naturally. Like, you know, do a little research on the person you're interviewing with. You know, find out, you know, have a look at their social media. I mean, everyone's stuff is up online these days, right? You can find anything about anyone. I mean, we do. I mean, I teach my staff, my recruiters, to, before they reach out to a candidate, look at their social media, look at their Twitter account, see if they're interested in anything, you know, and put that in the subject line, you know, whether it's they're brewing their own beer or, you know, because let's face it, it's very competitive. Trying to get people to respond to you is the first challenge. So make yourself stand out. So I think just really doing some research and talking about, you know, I always think everyone loves talking about themselves. Everyone has an ego and everyone likes it stroked. So stroke their ego a little bit. You know, it's fine. I always reference going into Nordstrom or any kind of department or any kind of store. You walk into a store, the sales associate comes up to you, you know, and the first thing they say is, hey, can I help you? The instant response is always what? You know, it's, no, I'm just looking. You know, no, get away. However, if that person would have walked up, if the sales associate at Nordstrom would have walked up to you and said, hey, those are great shoes. Where did you get those from? Big difference. You know, and all of a sudden you've got your guard down and then they say, hey, what can I help you, you know, look for today? And I'm sure you're going to be a lot more open to being like, oh, okay. So just things like that are very simple things. That's probably what they've done wrong, you know. Start a conversation. I mean, we deal with some people that are very socially awkward and that's fine. You know, software engineers in general are, you know, introverted. Not always, you know, they definitely change, but, you know, I would say a lot of the time they're introverted. So it's up to us to, you know, break them out of that and maybe give them some talking points they can talk to the hiring manager about. Oh, hey, you know, Dave is into, you know, he's really into swimming, or Jenny, she's you know, she's got her kids. She loves her kids. Talk about her kids. You know, if you've got kids, you've got some common ground. So really just find that common ground that just changes, you know, there's something that is always going to be in interviewing. First impressions. Right, everyone talks about first impressions. Well, you know, a first impression is a good impression. So actually having something in common with someone or having a talking point is a real good way to break the ice and changes the whole dynamic of the interview. That makes it go from a potentially bad interview to a hire. So very simple thing. That's probably what I would say is the number one thing that people should do.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that, Rory. I remember many years ago, there was a major organization I was recruiting for, Westfield, and their general counsel, I had a paralegal going in to interview with them, and their general counsel, I believe, had liked a certain sports team, and the guy picked up on it, the paralegal who went in to interview, and they vibed on it right away. He's like, oh, you like blah, 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 oh, I love blah, 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 and they just hit it off, and voila, next thing you know, they get hired. And sometimes it's like, who do we feel safe with? Who do I feel like I can have some sort of common ground with? It can be really powerful. And even if you're doing it via Zoom, you might not have the intimacy of somebody's personal office to use for social cues or cues for icebreakers. Though, like Rory said, I remember there was another guy who was an executive director of a major law firm. And I saw on his LinkedIn that he loved wine. And so at an event, I approached him. I was like, hey, you know, I saw you like wine. I was chairperson of the American Wine Society. And we wound up developing a relationship around that. So I think there's always ways to kind of cross over into that. One other thing, Roy, that I wanted to do before we wrap up today's show is we had talked a little bit offline about freelancing. Now, we had gotten an email from one of our listeners, and we always welcome your emails to getyourselfthejob@gmail.com, or you can feel free to leave us comments on iTunes or Amazon Music or iHeartRadio or any of the other places that you can find us. And this particular listener said, Jen, you haven't talked in at least in a while about freelancing. And if I recall, Roy, in the tech industry, it's almost more common or equally as common for people to freelance as it is to be a W-2 employee. So can you talk a little bit about the pros and cons of that in tech and why somebody might want to opt for a freelance, you know, sort of role as opposed to working directly as a salaried employee?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. And, you know, if you'd have asked me this pre-COVID, would have been a completely different response, because usually, you know, consultants and people that freelance and people that like to do that, they like to do it because they like flexibility, right? They like to work from home. They don't want to come into an office. Well, now everyone's not going into an office and everyone has that same flexibility. So that's been sort of out of the window a little bit. I would say, you know, one if you don't like to stay at one place for too long, you don't want to be stagnant. And there's people like that. My wife tells me all the time, I don't like to be in one spot for too long. I've lived in three countries now and I'm always moving around. She's like, can we just settle somewhere? So, I mean, people like that, and there's people like that with jobs as well. You see them have full-time jobs, but it's a year here, 6 months there, you know, another 8 months there. It's, you just don't do very well at one company, and just understand it, realize it about yourself, be honest, and just say, okay, I'm best to be a freelancer or a contractor because I do like to, you know, move around a bit. I don't want to stay still. What are the pros for it? I mean, the pros for it is, you know, you can move around a lot. There's flexibility. You can kind of work on your own hours. Although a lot of that's the same with full-time work now as well. So I tell you one thing, again, I know this probably isn't the answer that people are looking for, but the full-time world now is a lot like contracting used to be before COVID. That might change as people start going back into an office, and there might be a lot more contracting opportunities, and that might become more appealing. But now, because people are able to work from home, you know, even when, you know, everyone's, you know, immune to COVID, a lot of companies, you know, I'd say 50% of companies, you know, in general are going to be, you know, remote or part remote. So I think the benefit of being a consultant these days isn't as strong as it used to be. You know, do people make more money as a consultant? Good question. They can do, for sure. It depends on how much they negotiate their rate and how good the recruiter is, I guess. The other thing as well, you know, being a consultant, you always have to sort of, you know, look for the next thing. You know, so there's that, which, you know, if you like to do that, that's fine. If you like to sort of be the sort of person that, you know, works for 6 months and then has 6 months off and you can afford to do that, great. So that there's some other piece of flexibility, but generally the people you see from their resumes that they've been 6 months here, then a year, then there's a gap in their resume. And that's when we tend to have the conversation, like, have you thought about freelancing? Because that's what they should probably do. So I've multiple times I've had those conversations. I've converted a lot of people from full-time people to consultants, and vice versa. You know, a lot of people do consultant because that's all they can get. You know, some companies want to try before they buy, right? We have a client right now that wants to try before they buy. So it happens, you know, but I do say you're either a consultant, you know, or you're a full-time person. You know, you're generally not both. You know, once a consultant, always a consultant. You know, as a general rule of thumb, that's a generalization, but it's a pretty good one. So just know who you are, understand the risk involved in you know, in both, and decide what's going to be best for you, really. Happy to talk more on that. That was just kind of it has changed a bit since COVID. It's kind of blown it wide open. So,
Jennifer, I'm curious on your view, because you know, that's kind of your niche was always, we've had conversations over the years when I was recruiting about perm versus, you know, not permanent placement. And I think you were drawn to like more of the contracting, you know, what we refer to as temp. Why is that for you? Just out of curiosity. Never asked you that question.
If I'm being totally frank, Brandon, the reason that we had done that is it was just great because it was revenue as a company. When you're running a company, people think it's easy. You know, I remember when I left to open my own recruiting company, I thought, oh, I'm bringing in millions of dollars a year for them. And, you know, it's so easy for them. They just collect a paycheck. And then you go out and you open your own company and you realize that you need regular revenue. And so it was a win-win because we got to keep our employees, you know, employed. We got to provide them with healthcare and everything they needed, and our temporary employees, that is. And then simultaneously, you know, we were able to have a steady stream of income And so it was really a business decision, though we did probably equal parts of temp and permanent work. You know, and it's something I totally understand that, Roy. It makes so much sense. You know, I haven't really been as involved in recruiting the last couple of years, especially during COVID. And it is true that, you know, things have shifted dramatically. And I'm going to be curious to see how many companies move to either a fully remote schedule or to a combination remote part-time or remote some of the time and then part-time in the office. So I think that there's going to be a lot more options for people. Although I remember specifically, I had hired a recruiter years ago who was fabulous, one of my favorite recruiters I'd ever worked with. And she had a young child at home and didn't, you know, wanted to work from home 4 days a week and come in one, and actually didn't work for her. So I know a lot of people have actually struggled with being remote because some people need the social atmosphere, and that's what like kind of revives them and recharges them. So I think that maybe in the future, there'll be a combination of people who prefer to be in the office versus those who prefer to work from home. Though I think it is valuable that for the first time in, you know, centuries or ever, that people have the choice to do either or.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important to have a blend, because I also think on the flip side of that, the companies that are demanding people be in the office full time are not going to get the best talent, because, you know, now it's not about, you know, in Los Angeles especially, right? It's all about commute. It used to be the biggest factor for why someone 100%. Would take the other. Now it's not. It's going to be about, is it on site or remote? Commute's out the window. So it doesn't matter if they live in Glendale or Santa Monica or, you know, I couldn't recruit from any company from the Valley if my clients were on the West Side. So now it's different, you know? So it's just going to be on site or remote, or is there a combo? So, and the clients that, and the companies that don't do a blend are not going to get the best people. That's just period. So, it's definitely going to be interesting, and I'm excited to see, and we're already seeing it now. I'm starting to see it now. So, and the other thing that's interesting, and I'll leave with this, is I'm getting calls from clients of mine that, you know, you're thinking, oh, it's high growth mode right now, the competitiveness in technology, and everyone's hiring. Well, some people are hiring because they've just announced that they're going to bring everyone back into an office, and most of their engineers have just quit on them. So they're having to rehire them all again. So it's not even hiring because of them furloughing people or laying people off during the pandemic. It's because, you know, they've kept them on. They've been remote for a year and a half. They want to bring them back to the office, and they're like, nope, not doing that. So it that's a telltale sign that, you know, hey, you've got to have a blend, you know, because that is going to be a big factor.
Rory, I'm a little jealous, man, to go back in the time machine and not have the, wait, you won't go over the 405, or you won't go to West Hollywood, or you won't go to, you know, when I first became recruiting, I was like, this is their dream job. Of course they're going to do it. Come from the East Coast, naivete. And every recruiter that was seasoned in LA was like, no, they're not. No, they're not. Brandon, do not call the person Pasadena. I'm like, they're perfect. So I'm very, very, what glory days in recruiting, at least from that perspective, very unique to LA, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I remember people would say, we can't move past the 405, you know, and maybe Santa Monica. I'm like, well, you do realize it takes 30 minutes to get from Santa Monica to Marina Del Rey on a good day, right? You know, but you want to be on that side? Like, it takes the same time. No, I'm not doing it. I'm like, all right.
I've had that exact conversation about 100 times. It drives me nuts. I was like, what would the number be? No number? Cool. All right. Anyway, you could geek out LA recruiting trauma another time. No, thanks. I really appreciate it. If someone wanted to reach out, I know, Jennifer, you're probably heading here. If someone wanted to reach out to you, Rory, and whether that's a client, it sounds like you really have a real passion. I wound up doing only in-house recruiting eventually because I had a passion for my clients. Still do. I'm client-based. Whether that's the person I'm placing or the – so. Where can clients find you? Where can candidates find you?
For our website, which is just fabricstaffing.com. Or they can email me. So just rory@fabricstaffing.com. We used to have an office, but it's empty right now. So there would be an office line, but we don't have that anymore because all of our staff are remote and it's worked out great. And I'm still deciding whether we keep the office or not. So, but yeah, they're the two best ways. LinkedIn is also great. So yeah.
Perfect, Roy. And you service, just to remind people, the Los Angeles, Austin, and what's the other area you service?
it's just LA and Austin, but we're servicing all of the US right now because of COVID. You know, the last year and a half we've been doing everywhere, which has been great. But our biggest areas are certainly, you know, Los Angeles, you know, and Austin.
Perfect. Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I hope this has been helpful for everybody out there. It's so insightful because if you don't understand a recruiter's business or you don't understand how to get into an industry or how to work with a recruiter or not work with a recruiter, it's kind of like peeling back the curtain of Oz and be like, oh, that's what's back there. That's what goes on in a recruiter's mind. And just as Roy was saying, you know, there are good recruiters and bad recruiters out there. Good recruiters will listen, but they also won't be your dumping ground. A good recruiter will also have boundaries and will say, you know, thank you, yeah, I'm happy to listen to you. And they also won't spend hours on the phone. I know I used to do that sometimes to my own detriment, and then I wasn't able to be my highest and best self. So I think it's important to remember that, yes, you can confide in recruiters and find a good one, and they will be like gold, and you might have one with you for your entire career. I was just giving advice to a gentleman who I've been working with on and off for 10 years. And even though I don't recruit anymore, I, you know, still offer people advice if they need it. And that's what a good recruiter, that's what a good coach, a good anybody will do, is that they'll give you the time of day. And that's the value in developing these long-lasting relationships. So thank you so much, Rory, for all of your wisdom that you shared with us today. I hope this has been valuable for each of you out there whenever and wherever you happen to be tuning in from. And we're going to be doing a couple of other specials here. We're going to have one on board seats. I know a lot of people, I've actually now traveling around the world, met a lot of people who want to get onto boards, among other things. So we're going to talk about that with a new author on a book on board seats. So that'll be coming up soon, along with some other special shows that we have in store for you. And we are so grateful that you joined us and invite you to please rate us on iTunes. Feel free to share the episode. It definitely helps us to help more people. And you can also find us on iHeartRadio and Amazon Music, as well as on LA Talk Radio's website. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you, Rory. And wishing everybody a safe, happy, and healthy rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill and Brandon Maslin, only on LA Talk Radio.